could tell you that in my entire coaching career, I have never talked to any player, staff member about football air pressure. That is not a subject that I have ever brought up. I've never touched a game ball. That's not something that I have any familiarity with on that. And again, I was completely and totally unaware of any of this that we're talking about in the last couple days until Monday morning. Tom's personal preferences on his footballs are something that he can talk about in much better detail and information than I could possibly provide.
I didn't, have any, I didn't alter the ball in any way. I have a process that I go through before every game where I go in and I pick the balls that I want to, the footballs that I want to use for the game. I have no knowledge of anything. I have no knowledge of any wrongdoing of any. Yeah, I'm very comfortable saying that. I'm very comfortable saying that nobody did it. As far as I know, I don't know everything. I also understand that I, was in a locker room preparing for a game for 5 hours. I don't know what happened over the course of the process with the footballs. I was preparing for my own job and doing what I needed to do. I don't believe so. I mean, I feel like I've always played within the rules. I would never do anything to break the rules. I believe in fair play and I respect the league and, everything that they're doing to try to create a very competitive playing field for all the NFL teams. It's a very competitive league. Every team is, trying to do the best they can to win every week. I believe in fair play and I always believe in it for as long as I'm playing.
I'm not sure anything will come of it, honestly, if it's true or if it's not true. It didn't have much effect on the game, if any. If it did, then, whatever. If it's against the rules, it's against the rules. But it's not going to have any effect on this game. Nobody's going to get suspended. Nothing's going to happen. They're going to play this game. Whatever they did, the risk-reward was greater. People somehow get a skewed view of Tom Brady, that he's just a clean cut, does everything right, and never says a bad word to anyone. And we know him to be otherwise. In that moment of him being himself, he says some things, and we return the favor. And unfortunately, he apparently didn't remember what he said, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure in those moments of him yelling at the ref, he's just saying, good job, you're doing a fantastic job.
And just when you think you know all the answers, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady change all the questions for you guys. You're listening to The High Spot, the very first episode, a dawning of a new era, a day in history which will live in infamy. I am Brian Berger, your host, alongside Jeff Martin. Jeff, we thought we knew everything in sports. We thought that the old adage was cheaters never prosper, but apparently, I guess Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and the New England Patriots didn't get that message.
Brian, first of all, I am excited to be here on the very first episode of The High Spot. Glad to be here with my co-pilot, Brian Berger. And you know what? I'm excited for a lot of things. The Super Bowl is coming up, but to be talking about this, it's just mind-boggling to me because in the beginning of the week, I was talking to you and I was telling you, this is nothing. Nothing's going to be made out of this. But now it's become the talk of everywhere. Everywhere you go, I mean, CNN is picking up on this. Every news media outlet is doing this. Why? Maybe it's a slow week. But, Brian, we're talking about footballs here. Not players, not anybody, but footballs. And it's just mind-boggling to me. It leaves me speechless. But this is what we're talking about, and you're right, cheaters always seem to prosper when you're a New England Patriot. I really don't see the league coming down on the Patriots hard at all, and I mean, I'm not talking about after the season, I'm talking about now, because for the NFL to suspend Tom Brady or Bill Belichick in its biggest game, their showcase game, I don't think it's going to happen, and that is a total disgrace that that's not going to be the end result, because for the Patriots to not know how 11 out of 12 footballs got deflated by 2 ounces is ridiculous. And to see Tom Brady, when he usually does these press conferences, he's all confident and in a joking manner. But if you saw his face today, and the impression that I got was, how am I not going to not say something to incriminate myself? How can I get out of this where I don't look bad? Because when Bill Belichick came up earlier in the morning around 9 a.m., he kind of was like, you know, well, when Tom comes up to the podium, he can probably answer it because he knows exactly how he likes the feel of the footballs. You'd have to speak it up with him. I mean, he kind of threw him under the bus because now everybody was waiting for Tom Brady to speak, and that Tom Brady that I saw today in the press conference is not the Tom Brady that you usually see.
No matter whatever way you looked at it, no matter what you could have said, the evidence is there, Jeff. The fact that, you, like you said, 11 out of 12 footballs were being less than what they were supposed to be, deflated. I don't know. I mean, this is where I just scratch my head. You're right. We should be talking about the Super Bowl. We should be talking about two very good teams going up and discussing matchups, potential, you know, storylines going into it. You would never think this would be a storyline going into a Super Bowl. If you're the league, what do? You can try to have a very sturdy, harsh punishment, but then people are going to ridicule it and say, well, you can't do that. This is the Super Bowl. You can't, for example, if you went to the extent of suspending Tom Brady for the game or suspending Bill Belichick, both of them at the same time or one or the other, it's going to cause chaos. People are going to be like, well, we're paying our good money to see the best athlete, the best team on the field. You can't take that away from us. There's no easy way, and I'm sure the league is probably saying, you know, you had to do this at this time.
You know, the thing is, Brian, is, again, to think that on Monday and even yesterday, the league was, you know, gathering their information, and I thought that after reading Mortensen's report yesterday, Chris Mortensen from ESPN, that we were going to have a result or some sort of message from the league or a decision, but they haven't even talked to Tom Brady yet. They asked Tom Brady, has the league reached you? And he said no. So what is the NFL waiting for? And you know what it tells me? It tells me, and you know what, again, I'm not a corporation, but it tells me that all they're worried about is, hey, let's get through this game. Let's do this. Maybe it'll die down. It's a story. Maybe it has heads, maybe it catches on for 72 hours, and then it goes away. This is not going to go away, because you have Radio Row, you have the media, they're going to all come join up in Arizona, and this story is just going to keep rolling and snowballing and just going to be an avalanche for the Patriots.
Well, it's going to be naive of them to think that this is just going to be swept under the carpet, nobody's going to be talking about it. That's idiotic, in my opinion.
But where's the league, Brian, on this? Where is the league? Where's Roger Goodell? Again, they're just showing you that they think they're this high and mighty league that can look past the Ray Rice incident and think they're going to survive, look past this scandal here with the deflated footballs, and they're just going to think that it's just going to throw it under the rug, and the NFL is this giant, this money-making machine, and it's going to go away. And it just sucks. And eventually, one day, something's going to happen, and the NFL is going to have to, you know, tuck its tail between its legs and actually admit, hey, you know what? You know, we're doing it wrong here. This is wrong. And one day, they are not going to just be able to just hide this under the rug.
It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. There's no question about that. But the very fact that the league's not doing anything just reaffirms to me the reason why they're not doing anything, the reason why you're not seeing Roger Goodell or any executive come out publicly and talk about this in a press conference is they must be so shell-shocked of all the mistakes they've been making. You know, we can go back and talk about the Ray Rice incident. We can go and talk about the Adrian Peterson incident, about them not knowing they had any tape of the actual incident that happened with Ray Rice and his then-fiancée, now current wife, in the elevator. I mean, I get so sick and tired, Jeff, of watching TV or listening to radio and hearing people who represent the league, whether it be former players or executives, saying, you know what? We have to, you know, represent and protect that shield. How are you protecting it from every action that Roger Goodell's done?
The shield, please give me a break.
And a huge flop.
Roger Goodell.
And now this, which I don't know where I'm more mad at. I'm more mad at the league or I'm more mad at the Patriots, because
the league allows this to happen. And the Patriots, hey, they got punished for Spygate, okay? And then, you know, then what happens is that they poke at you. They come up with this ineligible crap, you know, and it's by the rules, you know, and because no one else sees it, they get away with it. And it's by the rules, but still, is it gentlemanly? Like, no. And then they do this, and the league allows it. And it's a disgrace.
They got caught at the worst possible time. And that leaves an asterisk in terms of anything you could believe in Bill Belichick and all his accomplishments, all his victories, Tom Brady and his legendary Hall of Fame career. I mean, we'll find out further
it
as
it stains a little bit.
It stains a little bit.
It stains that reputation of Tom Brady, that legacy that he has. Because if he would have won this Super Bowl, I would say he was probably the best quarterback of our generation. I don't care if he lost to Eli twice. But it doesn't matter to me. He's going to win. Would have won 4 Super Bowls. Minus this, did he really need to deflate the balls? Did they really need to do that? Even put themselves in the situation?
It just begs the question, are they that desperate to win that illustrious 4th Super Bowl?
Obviously.
And I don't believe Bill Belichick when he says, had no idea. You're the head coach. You're the head guy that everybody goes to. So the very fact that you don't know or had no idea until Monday doesn't speak highly of how you can hold down your team or know the ins and outs of your team.
What did Roger Goodell say? Ignorance is no excuse. Amazing. Here's my thing. They're available to talk about the New York Jets. Bob Kraft can hang up on Woody and not want to hear his apology when it came to Darrelle Revis. And let me tell you this story, and let me tell you how I feel about this. Woody Johnson. Let me tell you, the Jet fans wanted Idzik, Rex, and Woody to sell the team, okay? Woody Johnson is not the most media-savvy guy. I think he has tough times with press conferences. I think he likes to be behind the scenes. He had to go out there and explain what the state of the New York Jets on December 29th when he fired Rex Ryan and John Idzik, okay? And then you could say he got led into this question, but the issue of Darrelle Revis came up, and Woody Johnson says, yeah, I would love to have him back, you know? And I think it's the heat of the moment and what the Jet fans wanted to hear, even though I don't believe that he wanted Darrelle Revis back. I mean, that's one of the reasons John Idzik was a GM for 2 years. But for the Patriots and Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick to snipe and comment saying, you know what, there should be an investigation to that, and the Jets should probably be filed with tampering charges. Oh, there we hear you. There we hear the owner. Yeah, let's cost the Jets a pick. Let's hurt them because you have an owner that wants to, I would say, admit that he was wrong with Revis. That's all he wanted to do. There was no malice in trying to get Revis back because, honestly, gun to his head, he's not going to guess. He does not want any part of Revis and his agents. Okay, you hear the agents. Okay, I mean, you hear Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick and then whine about the Jets. So concerned about the New York Jets, right? And they want compensation because they felt like they're tampering with a player. What hypocrites they are. Because now, when this whole football fiasco comes up, quiet, innocent. I know nothing. They need a punishment handed down. And if you don't, hey, I get it. It's money. Money talks. And Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, if they miss the Super Bowl, you think the fans in Arizona, you think the people that go down there aren't gonna be like, hey, you can't put the best players like you said before, Brian?
Yeah.
Okay.
Scalp those tickets.
I get it. They're not touching them for the Super Bowl. But I'm telling you, if they're not fine draft picks and there's no suspensions out of this next year, you know, to me, the NFL has no integrity. Crap, Roger Goodell. That's what you guys are full of.
Like, the New England Patriots want to police the entire league, saying they're doing wrong. That's incorrect. They're tampering with our players. It's illegal. And yet they don't want to police themselves. That's pathetic, in my opinion. It really is. And for all the Patriot fans that go on Twitter and Facebook, okay, I get it. You've had your success. You've gloated. But for the very fact that they can defend this and somehow say, well, you know what? It's not that big of a deal because they would have won anyway. Yeah, you're probably right. They would have won anyway because, you know what? They had enough talent on the team to beat the Indianapolis Colts. It wouldn't have been close. But the mere fact that they had to resort to this and everybody's like, well, you know, it's cheating, but, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It's cheating.
This investigation by the NFL, really, Thursday, and no Brady questioning, nor talking to his representatives, really? And I wasn't even mad on Monday, but now, the joke.
I'm not the one going to point the finger and saying it's on Bill Belichick, it's on Tom Brady, but I'm not naive enough, neither is Jeff or any of you guys, to believe that they don't know what happened.
11 out of 12 is ridiculous. I mean, 1, 2, 3... Hey, the bad leather, the stitching is bad. 11?
Mm-hmm.
Come on. And the NFL, you know what they're busy doing? They're fining Marshawn Lynch $20,000 for making an obscene gesture, for grabbing his crotch. Yeah, that's what we're looking for. That we're on top of.
Well, we definitely know where their priorities are. And it's obviously not in keeping integrity of protecting the shield. It's basically just minuscule stuff that, quite frankly, makes no sense. It's not important. Like you said, it's a business.
At the end of the day, it's footballs.
It's footballs, and you know what? A few deflated footballs doesn't matter in terms of the buy rate and the buyout of a Super Bowl. And commercials. Don't forget, Super Bowl. It's all about commercials, advertising.
And do we have to pay some bills too, Bray? All right, lots more to talk about. We'll actually preview the Super Bowl when we come back. So lots more, guys. You're listening to The High Spot. Jeff Martin, Brian Berga. The inaugural first episode of The High Spot. Jeff Martin and Brian Berga back with you here on The High Spot, the very first show. The inaugural show, the one show that will determine the course of our history as far in the radio business and as far as podcasts are concerned.
Wow, talk about putting a lot of pressure.
There's a lot of pressure. You know.
But it's that good kind of pressure.
Brian thought I was a little cranky today, but you know what it is? I've not had a haircut in 2 weeks, and Brian knows that if I do not get my hair cut after like a week and a half, I get cranky. So I think that's why I kind of exploded in the first segment. And I'm not usually angry.
I think it worked for you.
Yeah. So should I let it grow out then? I kind of got like this Wolverine kind of look because my hair on the middle goes down. I got a little, you know, I can't wait to see it. It's looking good. I can't wait to see my
beard. I mean, I even convinced you to grow out your beard a little bit, which you were against.
Yeah. Well, it's because I at first couldn't grow it. And now, you know, look at the evolution of the beard.
Well, I'm a little cranky myself too, not to admit. I mean, folks, if you were to know me, I like wearing comfortable clothes, like, you know, hoodies and stuff like that, and I'm wearing very, you know, metrosexual here, you know what I mean?
Listen, Brian's a gamer, okay? He is not in the, what you would say, the tip-top condition today, but he's gutting it out because this is, of course, the very first show of The High Spot. Oh. So I don't care if I had to drag you down.
Doing this, I feel no pain.
This is game 7 for you.
This is my relief. This is my stress relief.
Of the, what, Stanley Cup Finals for you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Well, game 7 in anything. Don't care. 100%, 50%, I'm going. Unless I'm hurting the team, which I'm not in this case.
Well, I mean, I've seen you on ice, you probably would be hurting the team.
Probably.
Yeah,
he's not as bad as you would.
No. I can't even get over the boards.
That's all I plan on doing, you know, practicing a little bit ice skating during the summer.
Yeah.
If it ever gets here. Jesus.
Brian, so.
Just probably skate outside. It's freezing outside.
It is. I mean, I just can't wait till. Can't wait till, hey, you know
well,
what?
We've been lucky, though, because it hasn't been this bad. It's only been bad for a couple months now, so.
Yeah, but again, January, February, I mean, once the Super Bowl, here's the worst thing, okay? Once the Super Bowl is over, that month of February is just tough. I don't want to watch the NBA yet.
I thought you were going to tell me once the Super Bowl is over, the first thing is when are pitchers and catchers reporting.
Oh, that's true. No, you know what? I used to like pitchers and catchers, but what what bothered me the most is because when you see the sun in Florida and it's still here, you know what I like? I like watching the NCAA tournament, March Madness. Once the conference tournament starts and then Selection Sunday, I start beginning a spring is coming. The beginning of something, you know. I finally feel spring in the air. Even though it's March, March Madness to me is the beginning of spring. I don't know what you, I don't know how you feel about the winter. I don't know if you like it or not, but I'm looking forward to March.
Well, I like the extent of the holiday season and all that great feeling of fall going into, you know, the cooler weather, but yeah, it reaches the breaking point. Like, to me, the worst time of year is after January 1st, because then all the hoopla and all the excitement of the celebrating is kind of over, and then you're just left with a bitter cold. Yeah, so I've had enough of this.
Then February comes, and you're just, like, counting the days. Even though it's the shortest month, it seems like the longest month. But Brian, well, something that's not day-to-day is quick hits, and this is something where I just throw a couple of questions at you and see what your response is, see if you agree with me. But, you know, listeners want to know what you think about these things and stuff that I pull out. And, you know, besides...
Well, not just what I think about it. We want to know what you think about it, too.
Sure. So...
It's not all about me.
We are ready for... And again, we're going to try stuff new. We're going to bounce stuff back and forth. And if you guys don't like quick hits or this is a, you know, this tanks, like most of my ideas do, then we'll switch to something else. And I know we're going to talk... We're going to start with the NBA, and I know this is Brian's forte.
You know, this is actually a good thing because I'm not a huge advocate of the NBA. I don't really follow as much as I used to when I was a kid.
Listen, Brian was so excited about this show, and I think I came up with a LeBron question. Show went down the crapper. So I know not to start off with the NBA with Brian.
Well, talk to me about LeBron James. It's like what we spoke about before, which is the New England Patriots.
Luckily,
just can't stand both of them.
And luckily, this year it won't be a summer of LeBron, so hopefully, you know, that doesn't bore us to death. But we will start with the NBA, Brian. It is the quick hit segment. Kobe Bryant, the Black Mamba, diagnosed with a tear in the rotator cuff. We don't know how big the tear is, but again, at 36 years old, all that mileage on him, been in the league for so long. Do you think we're starting to finally see Kobe Bryant in the downward turn of his career?
I think he's been in the downward turn of his career before this. I mean, he's had injury after injury, can't stay on the court. At the same time, it's very difficult for him to stay healthy because at this point of his career, although 36 technically really isn't old, but when it comes to basketball, you're kind of already past your prime. His minutes aren't reduced. He's on the court for a long period of time. He's basically there. I wouldn't say their lead scorer, but a focal point of their team. They need to improve and be better. And this is a huge setback for him. I know he's a very proud man and he's got a big heart, but sometimes it's coming to the realization when this keeps happening, it's a pattern that's not going to go away. It's just going to get worse from here. And it starts to make you wonder, is the heart a little bit more stronger than the body now? And now with this recent injury, it's kind of proven that, you know, the heart and the mind say go, but the body's saying, I can't do it anymore.
Hey, listen, Kobe's done a lot in the league. NBA champion, scoring champion, the man. Probably the only reason why people still go to Laker games right now to see Kobe Bryant. Hey, does he shoot a lot? Hey, you know what? He should. He's the only good player on that team. But now you're seeing the mileage. You're seeing the downward spiral of Kobe Bryant. So we wonder if this is towards the end of his career. It looks like it. It's sad, but we'll see if next year he decides to come back. But the problem is they need to get players. And if they're playing with an old Kobe Bryant, is it an attractive place to go play? If you're Kevin Love, you could opt out and go. But do you think L.A. is an attractive place to play now that Kobe's on the near the end of his career?
Now, I didn't think I'd ever say something like this, but Cleveland actually looks more appealing than Los Angeles right now.
Cleveland. They got worse weather than we do. You know what the best part of being in Cleveland is?
Leaving Cleveland?
Leaving Cleveland. Would you say that about Ohio? What's that cute thing about Ohio?
It's high in the middle and round on both ends.
Just like I like my women. All right. So, anyways, Seahawks' Jeremy Lane, okay, cornerback for the Seahawks, claims that Gronk isn't that good. Okay, that's, first of all, I don't know how you feel about that, but this is what he said. I actually don't think he's that good. He's okay. He does have a big body, but from what I've seen on tape, he doesn't like you putting your hands on him. Who does? Unless you're, you know, hot and blonde. So if we put our hands on him and shake him up a little bit, he won't catch many balls. Okay, this is a guy that his first 65 games in the league has 54 touchdowns, and mind you, he's 6'6", 265, and just a freak of an athlete. I mean, do you think, you know, after all the Deflategate goes away, do you think that the Pidge can use this as bulletin material, or do you think he's out of his mind? Do you think he has a point, or do you think it's just total nonsense? I think it's nonsense. Gronk is a freak. He's the man. He's a beast.
Of all the big games that Gronkowski's had for the New England Patriots, he's either matched up with a corner that's undersized, because what corner is going to be the same exact size as him? You try to put a linebacker on him, linebacker's not athletic enough to keep up with him. But there is some truth to the technique and what they're talking about. Seattle Seahawks, we know, have very athletic corners. Big guys. And I think if that's your focal point defensively, is to jam him up on the line, since he's going to be your number one receiver, you're basically going to say, listen, we're taking your main weapon away, Gronkowski, which was kind of a no-show in the AFC Championship game. You know, we're going to force you to throw it to Edelman. We're going to force you to use everything else but Gronkowski and see if you can beat us. Can it be done? I doubt it. But is it a game plan worth trying? There's some legitimacy, because any receiver, even though it's a tight end and the freak nature that Gronkowski is, you impede any receiver on his route, the timing's off, it's not going to be as effective. So there is some legitimacy there.
Yeah, well, I think he is... To say that he's okay, that's ridiculous. I think he's a great tight end. I think right now he's the best tight end in the league. I think that he's got a chance to be a Hall of Famer. I think he is a tough matchup for a small cornerback or a safety. Are you going to put Earl Thomas on him? That's the question. Can the other Patriots receivers step it up? Maybe. Can they run the ball? We'll see. But again, the main thing is here to think that Gronkowski is just okay. I mean, it's just being silly. There's no way that he's just an okay player. 54 touchdowns in his first 65 games. And if he wasn't hurt, could you imagine how many touchdowns he would have? The damage he does to all the cornerbacks and all those teams. You can't even tackle him. Did you see that play where he carried the guys in the Indianapolis Colts game, the first game during the regular season in Indianapolis? That was crazy.
But he's had his share of injuries too, so you're always concerned about that. I mean, he's had back injuries, arm injuries, that forearm that wouldn't heal. So in terms of being a Hall of Famer, that's yet to be seen. But yeah, he's definitely, especially this season, been one of the key weapons for Tom Brady and one of the best tight ends in the league so far.
And my former Jets coach, Eric Mangini, becomes a new 49ers defensive coordinator, Mr. Personality.
He learned from the best.
Didn't cut it as a coach. As far as a head coach, but again, he comes as a defensive coordinator. Maybe he'll get another shot. Didn't do well in New York. What do you want to get out of him? What do you want to get him out of here? Because he just was not a good personality. In Cleveland, was abysmal. Hey, but now, you know what? He is a good talent evaluator. And maybe he gets another chance after San Francisco. Maybe, again, he'll get another chance to be a head coach. But Eric Mangini becomes a new 49ers D coordinator, and I just said that because he used to be a Jet, and but John Sterling, our thoughts go out to him, because there was a huge fire in Edgewater, New Jersey, and his complex burned down. I mean, he lost everything, and again, our thoughts go to him, John Sterling, the voice of the New York Yankees, along with Susan Waltman. And again, we hope nothing but the best. The best thing you can say here is, you know, at least you know, material things can be replaced, but you know, thank goodness that he's okay. And luckily, no one I think got hurt in that fire. So again, John Sterling, our thoughts and prayers are with you. You know, we know you'll rebound, and I'm sure the Yankee organization and family will know exactly how to treat John Sterling right. And he's done so much. His catchy home run calls when the Yankees win. Oh, the Yankees win! I mean, maybe
that was your best.
Doesn't appeal to a lot of people, but you know what? He is a Yankee great as far as like a personality. So I think the Yankees will do right by him. And again, our thoughts and prayers go out to John Sterling. And this is just, you know, just tough. He's a good guy, and we wish him the best.
No, definitely. It's a sad situation. But like you said, material things can be replaced. He can't replace lives. Luckily, nobody was injured in terms of that, so he's fine. It's unfortunate, like we said before, but at the end of the day, you start realizing what's more important in life. I'm sure the Yankee organization will do do their best to help him. He's become, like you said, a legendary figure, the voice of the Yankees. So, you know, very sad, but at the end of the day, the more important thing is that everybody's okay.
Yeah, and again, best wishes go out to him. That was Quick Hits. Again, you never know when
it's over,
I will just...
It's over already?
Oh, you never know when I'll take out the guns and just fire these rapid questions at Brian. And again, even though he's not 100%, he is gutting it out for you today. And Brian, that was Quick Hits. Lots more to talk about. And also, we will talk about the WWE Royal Rumble this Sunday. And a little farewell to the Izod Center, too. We'll get to that coming up next. You're listening to, I was going to say Quick Hits. You're listening to The High Spot. Jeff Martin, Brian Berger, after this.
You are listening to The High Spot here. My name is Brian Berg, alongside with my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. And Jeff, a lot of things we've been talking about lately during the show. Like I said, I'm a little under the weather. You're dealing with a hair thing. I don't know. You know, we're all not 100% like we'd like to be, but we're pushing away.
For Brian, a big deal is being under the weather. To me, a big deal is not getting my hair cut within 2 weeks, which just shows you our priorities and shows you.
But clearly, we're not at 100% here. With that being said, a lot of things going on next coming weeks, but something that I'm looking forward to and a little nostalgia here is that this Saturday, live event for the WWE, pro wrestling's always been a passion of mine as well as yours. Not only is this an historical time for us here being the first episode of The High Spot, but history's going to be made again this Saturday, because this Saturday will be the last WWE live event at the Izod Center. Before it was called the Izod Center, you might remember it as the Continental Airlines Arena.
The Brendan Byrne. That's how far back I go.
Me too. And it's like a chapter of our childhood closes, because I remember my first ever wrestling event there, growing up as a kid, going with my parents, watching Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Jake the Snake Roberts. And to see the crowd and the excitement and the product has changed, the business changes as obviously we get older and we get a different perspective from being a kid, an adolescent, to a teenager, to a young adult, to an adult now. And it's kind of bittersweet. For me, it's the Izod Center holds a lot of value to it because it's close by to where I live. I've seen a lot of great events there. It's sad to see it go, but you kind of saw the end coming.
By no means is this the mecca of anything. Okay, this is not Madison Square Garden. This is not.
It is for me, though. It was for me.
This is not the Barclays Center, but for us, it was.
Yeah.
You know, being two Jersey guys, and we're proud to say that, from Jersey. My first introduction to wrestling was on TV, Superstars Wrestling Challenge on Saturdays and Sundays, but I always wanted to go see it live. And I thank my parents, my mom and dad, because they popped the money up, and my first live event was the WWF at that time, Hulk Hogan versus Bad News Brown at the Brendan Byrne Arena. And I was hooked. And for my parents, who let's say they are not the wrestling fans that I am, you know, for them to take their time out, and for something that I loved, I will forever be indebted to them, because I was hooked. And, you know, we went for SmackDowns and Raws, and we had some great times. But again, I think good things come to an end. And, of course, it's going to close down at the end of the month. They have a couple of circus events towards the middle of March, but that'll be the end. And I was really looking forward to SummerSlam coming there, because that it was going to be in the summer of 2015, SummerSlam, and they're going to do the whole big thing with an access and all that, and most likely it's moving to Barclays or Prudential Center. But again, it's sad to see, and I have fond memories of that place. Again, not only did we see wrestling, WWE, but we saw the you know, NHL. We saw the Devils. We've celebrated Stanley Cup championships there. We celebrated Nets basketball when Jason Kidd was there. Basically, the only era I can remember of good Nets basketball. So, I mean, again, it's bittersweet. And would I like to be there? I'd love to. But when you go on there and you see the ticket prices for upper tier or anywhere near there, you know, it's unfortunate that I probably won't be able to go. But again, I just wanted to thank the Izod Center and WDB for great memories. And it's a great lineup. So for those who go, you know, enjoy it. I know it'll be Cena Rollins in the steel cage. And you'll see Roman Reigns and Chris Jericho will be there. So it will close the door on a chapter of our lives. And Brian, I know you, again, very bittersweet is your feeling right now.
Just like I won't believe it's gone until I actually see it. Not only the last WWE Live event, but the very fact that throughout the years I've been hearing, you know, all the things they plan on doing with the Izod Center. We're going to convert it into something similar to like a Mall of America type of thing, convert it into a casino, something with, you know, ski
water
lodge,
parks,
water
parks.
You never know.
Unnecessary stuff, retail stores.
Once you heard something and the ball before it started rolling, stop. So everybody's saying, nah, this is it. This is real. So, you know, you cry wolf enough times. And I'm a little hesitant to believe it. But again, you know, it is true because, you know, like Jeff said before, the WWE was planning on doing SummerSlam there. This whole huge thing, which I was getting excited for, believe it or not. I actually thought they were going to have it at MetLife Stadium again where they had WrestleMania 29, but now they're going to have it in Izod, and it was going to be so close by. I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be so cool. Get a bunch of buddies
on. Yeah,
we're
making plans to go.
And all of a sudden this happens, and you're like, wow. I kind of saw it coming, but I didn't think it was going to be until after SummerSlam.
Yeah, you don't want to believe it either because, you know, it's still, you know, it's your Izod Center. It's your arena in New Jersey, so.
And I have very fond memories.
And the last time we went, too, was great. Seats were great. We got to see Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton, The Shield. So it was a great experience that last time we went.
Rob Van Dam, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. A different perspective. CM Punk. Got to see him up close. Yeah. Closer than I've ever been. Yeah. Or you've ever been, believe it. We both went together. Yeah.
So the last time was a great experience, too, you know.
And that will always be with us.
Yeah,
and
that will be the last.
Whether we can make it to this one or not won't defeat the purpose that, again, it still holds a great meaning to us. Like we've said before, it's a chapter. But at the same time, hopefully good things for the Izod Center, good things for that area. Because I really believe that area around where MetLife Stadium is deserves kind of an up vamp look. And you know, if we can make some good business, then why not? All the better for it.
Yeah, I mean, the last time we had the front row seats, great, great time. And we also got to see Paul Heyman, too. He was managing Curtis Axel at the time.
Oh, yes.
And speaking of Paul Heyman.
We're huge fans of Paul.
Yes. Totally, probably, to me, the best manager besides
Bobby
the Brain
Heyman. I would say more admirers of Paul than we
yeah,
are.
Yeah, yeah, I would say. Hey, wasn't the best businessman towards the beginning, but he's intelligent. You know, knows what he's talking about. And recently, he had an interview with RollingStone.com, and they published an interview with Paul Heyman, and some interesting things from that. One of the questions was, Paul Heyman, guys, you know, we're always wondering, well, you know, what happened with Cesaro? Why couldn't he get it over with Paul Heyman? I thought that was a great pairing up. Cesaro was hot. He was coming off the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, where he eliminated the Big Show. He was on a roll. Then the next night becomes a Paul Heyman guy. What do you think went wrong, Bri, with Cesaro and Paul Heyman?
A number of things. I think that as the years have gone by, Jeff, and you and I have watched this business evolve, and not only the business evolve, but our own perspective of it evolve. I think what people need to understand when you look at professional wrestling, or in this case, people like to label it sports entertainment, but for me and Jeff, it will always be professional wrestling. You have to look at it this way, that, you know, certain things, whether you want to label it, you know, the next Paul Heyman guy, or why is there no next big stars? The most simplistic way I can say this is, in this business, things have to happen naturally. Has to be something organic, which is a word I like to use a lot, because it's true. Guys like Stone Cold Steve Austin, guys like Triple H, guys like Shawn Michaels, guys like Bret the Hitman Hart, those guys became stars because the crowds believed in them and believed in what they were saying, and they themselves believed in what they were saying.
Now, when you have a great talent like Cesaro, right, and a great mind like Paul Heyman, you would think, hey, put these two together and it's money. No question about it. But the thing about it is sometimes you can't force things to be to happen. They have to happen naturally on their own accord. And sometimes right time, right place, and that's what it is. When you put things together and you try to make a formula of your own and really fight with Mother Nature in this case, it's not going to work. And I think that's where it went wrong. Cesaro had a huge pop. You and I had the pleasure of going to WrestleMania 30, seeing how over he was, which to this day Vince McMahon will say, you know, he still has to connect to the crowd. At WrestleMania 30, even prior to then, the crowd was invested into him. And still is to a point, but, you know, they're kind of depressed in the way he's being booked. The fact that he got hooked up with Paul Heyman just kind of threw a big question mark and a monkey wrench because, hey, we want to cheer this guy, but yet you guys want us to, you know, the WWE, the creative monster, the machine, as they call it, wants us to boo him and make him a bad guy or a heel. So in terms, it just didn't work. As great as Paul Heyman's mind is and as great as Cesaro was, it just, to me, when I first initially saw it, big shock, wow, but I didn't think it was going to last.
I mean, it made sense at the beginning. I was all for it. I really thought it was going to catch steam, but I think that as I summarize this, because you can all go on the website, rollingstone.com, and read it yourself, but to summarize what he said, he basically said that he set the bar high, he thinks, with Brock Lesnar, with CM Punk, so he felt the chemistry was there, and he kind of thought that, you know, you could put this manager with any kind of wrestler and it would work. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes just the chemistry isn't there. Why? I think really Cesaro shouldn't have talked. I think they tried for him to be an advocate, have him speak for it, but I think it just started with the matches weren't there. I think he needed to be pushed right away in order for it to succeed. Maybe it would have worked out differently, but he goes on to say that sometimes it just doesn't work, and I'm sure the wrestler's goal is to make it work, but, you know, sometimes the chemistry just isn't there, and I agree with that, and as much as I think it made sense, for some rhyme or reason, I can't put a finger on it, because Cesaro has everything you could ask for in a superstar. It just, the connection is not there. And now what I'm worried about is he's with Tyson Kidd right now, and I saw Monday Night Raw this past Monday, and they're not even reacting to Cesaro now. It's kind of quiet when he comes in. I don't see that reaction, so it's scary. I hope Cesaro can be saved, because I think that's just a hidden gem that WWE has.
In my opinion, I don't think he's lost the crowd, but the crowd is hesitant now to commit for the fact that they don't want to see something that you enjoy, something you like, be, you know, knocked down. You know, I think similar was Daniel Bryan, and I'm not comparing Cesaro to Daniel Bryan, but a lot of people were cheering him, you know, wishing him, wanting him to succeed, trying to convince the WWE this is who we want to be pushed up and to be elevated, and WWE kept knocking him down. I just hope they believe in him, and I just hope they don't lose faith in the fact that I think this guy can break through if he just, in my opinion, becomes himself. If he stops trying to act or trying to read off what's being scripted and just be himself, I think there'll be, you know, a great ceiling for Cesaro to reach, and it's going to be pretty high.
And speaking of Tyson Kidd, Brian, just one quick, I want really quick, because this just hit my mind right now, is, you know what WCW is good at? They made the secondary titles important because they had 3 hours and they had to fill any 3 hours. So Eric Bischoff made those titles important. Could you imagine if the Intercontinental title or the U.S. title were relevant and say Wade Barrett takes on Tyson Kidd? You know how great those matches would be? If Tyson Kidd could find some way to connect with the audience, do you know how great of a talent he is? Can you imagine Ziggler and Tyson Kidd going at it? Maybe half an hour for the IC title. You know how much they would steal the show if you just gave them a shot? And that's why I think they need to make those titles important, because guys like Tyson Kidd, guys like Cesaro can go, but they need a reason to go. They can't just put them in there and just have them go and then have the audience connect. I mean, it's a thought, and WWE, this is a free thought, but I'm going to start charging soon, and I better be part of the writers. What do you think, Bri? Do you think they need to do that?
I definitely do. I think... somebody who brought up a great point, and I think sometimes gets underlooked sometimes. Triple H himself has always gone on publicly to say that, you know, his belief is kind of old school, and I kind of think the same way. And Jeff, you can tell me if you agree or disagree, but he always goes on the record saying that it's not the title that makes the guy, it's the guy that makes the title. And that's true to a certain degree, which I believe.
when you see guys like, for example, Rusev, who has the U.S. title, and Wade Barrett, I mean, both guys are very talented, but at the same time, if they're not going to be shown or their skills not going to be shown in terms of the quality of opponents they face, then you're not going to really see it, and it's basically just a placeholder. It's not going to go anywhere, and when you have the opportunity to have a title fight, and this match is for the United States title or the Intercontinental title, it's supposed to mean something because those are supposed to be the guys that are next in line to be the main eventers. And when you don't do that and you don't put emphasis on that, that's where I feel WWE's having issues with the next top star, because believe it or not, folks, eventually one day John Cena will no longer be able to perform. I'm sure a lot of us will be happy when he doesn't, but at the same time, it's a scary thought because there's nobody next in line. You could talk about Roman Reigns. You could talk about possibly Daniel Bryan taking that spot again. But if you're not building towards the future, then your product is going to suffer, and that's what we've been seeing so far.
No, excellent point, Bray. And then he goes on to say, they ask about the next evolution of pro wrestling. He doesn't feel that the next evolution of wrestling will be with wrestlers or the way they present it, but the way they distribute it. And he feels that with the way that everything is now seen on tablets, phones, smartphones, you can see it off your computer, you can see it off anywhere. I think what he's trying to say is that that audience, that young audience that is open to that technology, they're going to be the target audience. So all those people that think that the TV-14 era is going to come back, what Paul Heyman believes is that a younger audience is going to, be more interested in the WWE. So it looks like PG is going to stay around for a little bit longer. What do you think?
Well, I think if anybody thought that TV-14 was coming back anytime soon, you're kind of kidding yourself. I would be kidding myself. It took me a long time to get over the fact that, the Attitude Era that you and I were fortunate enough to see was going to always be there, or it was going to have an opportunity to come back. We have to remember, this is a publicly owned company now. They have other people to answer to. Advertisers don't want to be associated with that type of Attitude or TV-14 type of generation anymore. And we know we're not the demographic audience anymore. I hate to say it, but I'm getting old too, and I'm not, 18 years old, and I'm not, 7, 10, 11 years old, 13 years old, where I'm, buying John Cena merchandise. I'm not. So I know that where they're going in terms of target audience. I kind of agree with Paul Heyman to an extent in terms of, I feel, the presentation of what the product is, I think, will change, not just in distribution. I think it always evolves. We always see, different sets, different ways of presenting it, NXT becoming very popular. This isn't just about the WWE, folks. This is also about professional wrestling, not necessarily sports entertainment. I mean, I can even throw TNA in there. I remember the day when I first saw TNA, before they were dealing with their issues, I saw an eight-sided ring. It was different. It was new. It was something, a different type of presentation that I'd never seen before, yet it was still the same type of skill, same type of business, and it brought something new to the table. Now, obviously, we can spend a long time in future shows talking about TNA and
we will,
Ring of Honor, for example.
We will bring up other wrestling organizations.
Exactly, and they present things differently than what WWE does. So I think when Paul says that, I think maybe he's being misquoted, but I believe the presentation will always evolve and always change. In terms of distributions, I remember, Jeff, when you and I, we were, going to the newsstands, how archaic is that, and getting wrestling magazines.
I know, and now we can go online and look at these websites, tons of them, and get our information there.
Yeah, and now, with the mainstream media, like Twitter, for example, we see a lot of superstars now have Twitter accounts and, promoting themselves that way. And back then, you go to autograph signing, so yeah, that has evolved, and that will actually continue to evolve even more as technology advances. So yes, I agree with technology will increase the distribution of the product, but at the same time, I think the presentation will always evolve going into the future.
Yeah, definitely a lot of ways that you can get access to WWE and wrestling in general. And I think that's the ways you can look at Japan and overseas stuff too, by how you can access them. YouTube, a main reason too. Brock Lesnar's historic year in the WWE. Of course I have to ask him that because he's the advocate for the reigning, defending WWE World Heavyweight Champion. It's tough to say all that, but if you look back at 20 years...
Yeah, Paul
years
Heyman
from,
makes it sound so easy.
It does. That's why he's better at talking than I am. If you look back at the WWE 20 years from now, I would suggest that the two most newsworthy matches of the past year were Brock Lesnar conquering the Undertaker's undefeated streak at WrestleMania. See, I'm trying to get in character. And the uncontested beatdown of a top star in history, of the top star, when Brock hit John Cena with not one, not two, not three, but 16 suplexes and crushed him at SummerSlam. I don't think anything else from a historical perspective can hold water to those two events. Brian, Brock Lesnar's impact since coming back to the WWE, maybe it was losing steam in the beginning, but these are two events Brock Lesnar will be remembered for, these two events. And I think those are the two things I think about this year.
Those definitely stick out of your mind. You know, we were witness to the ending of the streak, which was shocking. You know, I never saw a huge, gigantic stadium silent where you can hear a pin drop. And you saw SummerSlam, which I thought was kind of funny. Everybody's looking forward to the match, and then you basically squash your number one guy, which I've never seen before.
It was a beatdown.
The only close thing I could say is probably the equivalent when The Undertaker defeated Hulk Hogan for the WWE title. As much as those are positives for Brock Lesnar, I kind of felt it could have been more. Now, everybody's going to say hindsight's 20/20. You can always go back and say, well, you could have done this differently. You could have done that differently. I'm sure Paul, if he was on the show or if I was talking, would say the same thing to me. Let it go. You do the best with what you have right now at the moment. Yes, true. But if I felt this could have been a lot more impressive in terms of this guy would have been more dominant and give more relevancy, because towards the beginning of his return, we could both disagree or argue that he was booked improperly. And The Undertaker is basically what saved him to make him more relevant than what he was, because he was losing steam quickly. He's a main attraction. Like he says, he's a prize fighter, and people will pay money to see him, which is proof. He's a freak of nature. Not just of what he's accomplished, but just he's a freak of nature as a person. So, no question, Brock Lesnar has made an impact. How much? Only time will tell in the annals of professional wrestling or sports entertainment.
And speaking of Brock Lesnar, we will talk about this Sunday night in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the Royal Rumble. The road to WrestleMania begins this Sunday night, and Brock Lesnar will be defending the WWE World Heavyweight title in a triple threat match this Sunday on pay-per-view or on the WWE Network for $9.99. I know, I fell into that trap.
Wow, how much did the WWE pay you, dude?
Nothing. They will be paying me after we give out these ideas for free about Tyson Kidd and Wade Barrett and Dolph Ziggler.
Cesaro.
We'll be on the payroll. So a triple threat match, Brock Lesnar the champion against Seth Rollins and John Cena. I think Brock Lesnar is going to come out the champion. I think he will drop it to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. So I think that Roman Reigns will win the Royal Rumble. And I think it has got to be. Although I'm a little worried about Paul Heyman recently maybe turning on Brock Lesnar, but I don't see that happening. I think Brock Lesnar comes out the winner. I think he pins Rollins, and I think he avoids having to beat John Cena. And I think that the WWE is going to hold for it, and I think you're going to see Reigns and Lesnar. But interesting, Brian, did you see Triple H's interview with Michael Cole this week?
I didn't catch it.
He mentioned the fact he called Brock Lesnar like one of the dinosaurs, and they start becoming extinct because there's faster, there's younger evolution. I think that's the beginning of the end of Brock Lesnar's term with the WWE, because I think they're slowly coming to the realization that, you know what, he's probably not going to resign. He's probably going to go UFC, maybe Bellator. But those little clues are starting to make me believe that at WrestleMania 31, that will be Brock Lesnar will wind up his contract with the WWE, and I think that's where he'll pass the torch to Roman Reigns.
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I can both disagree on when that's going to happen. We both know his contract expires at WrestleMania 31, but there's no guarantee that he's going to be holding on to the title or even reach WrestleMania 31. What you just told me about Triple H, the interview you had with Michael Cole, definitely gives you hints that this is the end of the run for Brock Lesnar. Not only that, but obviously Brock Lesnar's relationship with Paul Heyman, the way they're playing it out on TV. The way I see this going is basically I see Seth Rollins walking away with this. I see Brock Lesnar winning the match, but I see, and I know you'll be disappointed because you want to see somebody cash in at WrestleMania, but I see it being cashed in at Royal Rumble with Seth Rollins having the aid of Paul Heyman and winning the WWE World Heavyweight title that day. I mean, yeah, that's the way I see it.
I can see that too.
Because at the end of Raw, you saw Brock Lesnar in a different light. People were actually cheering for him. He actually looked like a baby face.
Yeah.
And you see Paul Heyman being a little bit hesitant trying to control this animal, this beast. And what do you do when you can't control him anymore? You take him out in the back and you take care of him and you point to the future, which is Seth Rollins, which I think in that case, if you put those two together, would actually be a good combination.
Okay, so you see Seth Rollins finding a way to become the world champion.
I think his future starts sooner than we would have anticipated.
Okay, and the Royal Rumble winner would be? I mean, I think Roman Reigns. As much as I wanted to say Daniel Bryan, I'm going to go, since I have to go with, you know, my gut feeling, I'm going to say Roman Reigns.
Yeah, that was a huge question mark for me. I would like to think that because Daniel Bryan came back, it was going to kind of slow momentum down. It doesn't seem like it. Looks like the WWE is still going to stick with Roman Reigns. I'm a fan of Roman's, but I think, you know, he's lost a lot of momentum in his promos and his in-ring performance hasn't been up to par to what the fans or the WWE thought it was going to be. If I had to pick somebody right now as a maybe safe bet, I would have to pick Roman Reigns. And nothing else has been promoted.
No, so we won't even go and bother and analyzing those matches because if the WWE is not going to take their time out and promote these matches, then we'll just know that they are focused on the 30-man Royal Rumble and they also are focused on the title match. So
you know what I'm focused on, Jeff? It was so funny when we first brought this up and we're talking about, you know, the season changing, how we're looking forward to the summer for SummerSlam at the Izod Center and just the idea of, you know, changing the seasons. You can actually feel it in the air now. And I actually do a little bit. It's WrestleMania season.
I know.
And this is where things start getting a little bit more exciting if you're a wrestling fan.
We're going, by the way.
And that's just icing on the cake. That's the cherry on top, basically. Looking forward to see how these storylines are going to play themselves out after the Royal Rumble.
Did I mention we're going? We're going.
Oh, we're going. Oh, you know what? I'm already there. Physically, I'm here. But mentally, I'm already at Levi Stadium in my seat with my Jericho t-shirt on, ready to go with the camera. Hopefully, I have enough battery power this time to film it because not only are we going to that one, but eventually we'll be going to Jerry World.
Yes, and of course, WrestleMania 32 will be in Dallas, Texas, in Arlington at Jerry's
World. That was huge breaking news.
Yeah,
exactly.
It was. Brian, real quick before we go, just two questions. Will we see Sting at the Royal Rumble?
I think we will, but again, it'd be similar to what we've been seeing him at Survivor Series and we've been seeing him at Raw. I think after the Royal Rumble, we're going to start seeing him a little bit more consistently, starting to build up the whole thing between him and Triple H. Seems to be a storyline going there and see where it leads. We'll find out.
All right, and last one, your percentage that Brock Lesnar is done with the WWE after WrestleMania 31.
I would say at this point right now, the way he looks physically, he's dropped a lot of weight. All the rumors flying around, I would say 90% I'm sure he's done after WrestleMania. What would you say?
I would say about that. I would say like 80-20, but I think he's going to head to the UFC or Bellator. I think he's going to hold the WWE a little ransom, maybe, but I think at the end of the day, hey, you know what? He gave us three WrestleManias, 29, 30, 31.
It could have been better, the outcome of it, but he's definitely...
Yeah, he gave us a lot, though. He gave
us more than what we expected.
Three WrestleManias is more you could ask for Brock Lesnar. And again, you know, the Royal Rumble is this Sunday on pay-per-view or the network.
An historic event, Jeff, where history will be made, hopefully for the good, not for the bad. And we've been part of history right now, too. Because, folks, you're listening to the very first episode, the one of many, with me and Jeff, my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. And we're glad to have you on. And hopefully a lot more things coming up in future weeks when you guys listen to this. Bunch of guests, a lot more things, a lot more ideas coming out of us for this very first episode. We're very thankful to be part of it. Jeff, thank you so much.
Hey, listen, we've just tapped in to a potential here. And again, great working with you. Lots more stuff coming up in the next coming weeks. Brian, again, the first ever episode of The High Spot is Jeff Martin.
Brian Berger. Have a good night, folks.
Say bye, Brian.
Bye, Brian.